You are listening to Jaya Ashmore. You can find hundreds of meditations and talks on my websites, jayaashmore.org, jayaashmore.org, as well as opendharma.org, opendharma.org. All the recordings are offered in the tradition of generosity or dana, and your gifts are welcome. Thank you for listening. Anyone would like to ask or share something?
Yeah. I just wanted to share an image I had during the last meditation, and before lunch I was with some challenging past experience, and I went to Jaya and I felt like I was navigating a kindergarten of different aspects of myself and not being able to meet any of their needs. And Jaya very kindly saw me in my circumstances and provided me with a practice that I went off to do at some point after lunch. And heading into nature, I had a spot in mind. I saw a tree with a big wound on its side. And my sense of the tree was its magnificence and its wound. And it wasn't magnificent despite its wound. The magnificence and wounding were there together. And in my practice, on the cushion here, so I did the practice out there that felt very helpful, and then on the practice here I had a sense of my own magnificence being this light, kind of multicoloured light, kind of without beginning and end, and also then circling around was the vulnerability, providing a golden aspect to it. And I think before I've tried to separate the vulnerability and push it away and diminish it, and actually by welcoming it, something very magical happened. And in that there was a sense of actually that allows me to be seen. That gives me the capacity to be seen when they're together. And then just one little other bit, I just really wanted to honour my own courage and commitment to my path, and a sense that each of us in this room, in the poem, I think, was it something around the crossing the paths of love? We've all got the courage and commitment by virtue of being in this room, to do that, and I just think it's immeasurable. Thank you, Jaya. Thank you.
I'm smiling even more than I would be because of the poem that came to mind for today that some of you would have heard me read before. It's not so short. The Sycamore for Harry Caudill, I think. Yes. In the place that is my own place, whose earth I am shaped in and must bear, there is an old tree growing, a great sycamore that is a wondrous healer of itself. A sycamore is just a kind of tree. Fences have been tied to it, nails driven into it, hacks and whittles cut in it. The lightning has burned it. There is no year it has flourished in that has not harmed it. There is a hollow in it that is its death, though its living brims whitely at the lip of the darkness and flows outward. Over all its scars has come the seamless white of the bark. It bears the gnarls of its history healed over. It has risen to a strange perfection in the warp and bending of its long growth. It has gathered all accidents into its purpose. It has become the intention and radiance of its dark fate. It is a fact, sublime, mystical, and unassailable. In all the country, there is no other like it. I recognize in it a principle, an indwelling, the same as itself and greater, that I would be ruled by. I see that it stands in its place and feeds upon it and is fed upon and is native and maker. That about says it. Shall we go outside now? Sorry, Wendell Berry. Yeah. I kind of wear him like a cloak, so I forget that if you haven't met me before, you don't know that. Someone asked a question by note about sort of like, did you say something that time, repeating again about the most creative is in the rest, something like that. So you might remember, because I said it about 7 times, the most creative, the most creative. You might not have heard what. I remembered later, listening to so many Dharma talks and like, hearing what? Just missing the key word. So, rest. And so just hearing and kind of living into that poem, we can sort of feel the source of the words would be from rest. It would be from out of nowhere, and it would be from living in his place and doing the work of that place. But it's not then that work that's directly making the poem. It's informing. And then giving, oh yeah, rest. And I wanted to say a little bit more about that queen thing that we started this morning and also yesterday. And that was partly why I was grateful to my mind that it remembered this poem today. So we talked this morning about specialness. And that maybe we're just at the beginning of learning about a wholesome specialness, as we're at the beginning of letting go of the destructive specialness, drive. We never arrive at drive towards the destructive drive towards a specialness that is, you know, set up never to be achieved. Because the beginning, it starts from disconnect and breeds more disconnect. And so he says, in all the country, there is no other like it. And also with that question about how to come into loving the body, life's body, that we call ours. And one way is with the help of trees. With the help of trees. Just any tree. Even on a tree farm. In all the country, there is no other like it. And it could just help kind of make a little, like just break a little bit the drive that eats away at us. That we wish we could love our body as it is and lose weight or whatever.
Or gain.
Yes, or gain or whatever. Have, you know, different knees or something. And we just a little break in that, whatever we could call it, those glasses or something. And just imagine if we all looked alike, if we all had like whatever the thing is now. It'd be awful. Sorry? Yeah. Well, but if we really, like, instead of, like, half, you know, we, like, half want to be original and authentic, and if we could just sneak in, like, whatever the thing is. But if we really, like, just look at it, what the ask is, it is completely contradictory, because it would be that we would all look the same, and then it wouldn't be worth being that way. Because we'd be all the same. So just that paddle boat that we think we are, and just the hubris of, so like that pride that we could start to scent that is dangerous, is getting towards suicide. Hubris, is that in Portuguese? Anybody? I mean, what is that, Latin, Greek, Latin?
What's the word?
Hubris.
Pride. I don't even know it in English.
Oh, really? I mean, we just say hubris. So what is like, so that's very, very specific pride. So in the all of the Greek tragedies, in every tragedy, actually. It's hubris is the thing.
That's
it's every, but it's okay. For example, in our paddle boat, with this feeling that we've all experienced, I'm sure, that after all these, whatever it is, hours, days, retreats, months, years of trying our best, how is it possible that I'm still
completely distraught that there's not hot water. Or that I forgot my socks, or whatever. Or that I could actually hate someone that I don't know, or whatever the thing. And I'm saying, let's recognize the hubris in that. That I think I should have that much control over what's happening, even in my so-called self. And then it eats at me that I don't have that control, that I take it as something shameful, but I don't just stop and say, oh, maybe that means I'm not in control. And that maybe not being in control isn't so bad. Being released isn't so bad. Nor is the fact that we just so easily get caught up in that. Self-criticism. Does that make sense? Does anyone want to ask something to clarify?
Is hubris a bit like irony then?
What was the question?
If hubris is like irony. I think that in our age, we go to irony so soon. And I think we could see the irony, but then if we could like put some leavening into the irony, that it's also, there's some humor and not just like irony, not so jaded. And so just if we could sometimes feel how much at the beginning we are, at the beginning of feeling at home, at the beginning of feeling joy, at the beginning of sparkling, so at the beginning. Just at the beginning of intimacy, for beginners, how good. Just at the beginning of getting the taste of how the mind undoes its own, like, sort of heavy limiting beliefs. When we're not going against ourselves because we think with our little tiny paddle on the huge sea, that we can make our boat go where we think it should go. Now. Like with one stroke, you know. And it is a bit magical thinking in that childish way. And it's then avoidance of the magic that there is. So a bit talked about privacy and exposure, vulnerability, tenderness. And then privacy this morning in the meditation, the sense of, for many of us, that feeling of, no one can see me, no one's watching. What happens? That starts to be meditation. That feeling, as if no one could see me, including not that one inside me that's the worst of all watcher. And I just like very playfully want to kind of revisit the Garden of Eden story, just so playfully wondering if we, like, just the crux of the story. What if the crux of the story isn't the eating of the fruit, which definitely was not an apple in that climate? just in case we thought it was sort of a story that no one had ever fiddled with. What if the crux of the story is after we realize we ate from that tree? What happens is shame, so hiding, and then God says, "Where are you? Can't find us. We went out of communication with the holiness because of shame." What if we said, "Yep, well, sooner rather than later, we ate the fruit." So what? All of that right and wrong thinking, so what? So it's like a away of the kind of, what's the word? Blindness. Rather than taking on a kind of blinding, taking on of rules about right and wrong, good and evil. We just, that's one tree in the garden. Didn't taste too good either, actually. Stick with the tree of life from now on, now that I've tasted it. Because organically emerging from life is a sense of what works and what doesn't work. And even many times, in a deep way, what feels good and what doesn't feel good. And that's enough. But it is through tasting. It's not possible before tasting. And this is our mistake. This is why our energy is being spent to no avail. To no avail. Try. In the Yoga Sutras, we're given two parts of our path, and one is practice. And it specifically says, for a long time, practicing continuously for a long time. So, and not only that, but appropriately. So we kind of knew that by now. The other part is vairagya, which is often translated as renunciation. For anyone, is that word helpful?
I didn't hear the word.
Renunciation, to renounce.
Okay.
Yeah? I'm just curious, because maybe someone has a good relationship with that word. I mean, it is funny, and I'm curious, in case you do. I would like to hear. Having tasted.
Yeah.
Were you going to say
something? Yeah, I think you have to kind of interpret it, but for me it's become quite positive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, certainly my reaction to it first.
Yeah. Yes. So we need to come to know how letting go happens, which is after tasting. and then we can talk about letting go. Letting go is like ripening. When it's ripe enough, it falls off. So, or have you tried letting go, and did it last? Do you know anybody? And again, I'm very willing to hear if so. I haven't heard of anybody. Trying, for example, the quitting to smoke thing and feeling good for a few months or even a few years. So I want to tell a story, part of a story, about a French boy. I have a little group of friends, I think, Wendell Berry and Jacques Liceron. He loved really all of the senses, but he loved colors and light. He loved light. Also sounds. And in an accident at the age of 8, he lost sight. He lost the use of his eyes. One of these things that we can't understand, but does happen. One of those, like, oh yeah. It doesn't make sense if it's just each of us in our little boats and our little paddles, because these things happen. And to make room for Kabir and others today, I'm going to say just miraculously, with the help of his parents and the nature of things, he kind of unlocked things and was able to see without the use of his eyes, in a way. And it also, by the way, started with a tree and the love of a tree that he just wanted to see again so much. And he tried his best by going outward to the tree in the middle of Paris in a park with his dad. And it didn't work, and it didn't work, and it didn't work. And it was like something, maybe the love of the tree, and I think also the confidence in there somewhere, that found like all that effort that was unfruitful, but the love stayed, and I think some kind of buoyant confidence. In a way, let's say, that how could someone love a tree that much and not be able to see it? Eyes or no eyes, who cares? And something he describes reversed direction and went so in. So in. And then it happened that he could see the tree. And it wasn't just a one-time thing. So he could run and play with his friends. It wasn't just like a little bit. But, he says, when I, at all costs in the game, wanted to be first, I couldn't see. When I got so, now I don't remember the words exactly and I don't have it here, but when I got so frustrated with the luck and the key or whatever, then I couldn't see. So basically, when I took myself to be a small boat and one paddle, then I couldn't see. And he said, what use of a moral code, what need, rather, of a moral code? The tree of life is maybe where God finds us, where we come into like sanctuary holiness, sacredness. So in the Kabir poem and the Dupatta, And you might want to check out, there's one painting in the drawing room of Krishna and Radha. It's such a wonderful story. They were like 13 years old. And they were sneaking out in the middle of the night. Just imagine. And it started to rain. And so the best umbrella was the dupatta. Protection from the rain, privacy. For just 13 years old, making love. Now for us, like, but 13 is underage, but actually, you know, there's, so, but anyway, our own inner 13-year-olds. So much happens there, and by the way, just sort of like an asking us in sort of re-envisioning culture. What to do about 13, that it could be lucky. And again, just another Eddie. Just, I've been thinking this week, somehow it's come to mind of a couple of the Catholic saints. I mean, we think of a saint and think of a nun and rosary and maybe some self-flagellation in there or something. But the 13-year-old girls, man, having visions. Joan of Arc, and in Lourdes, she was digging in the mud for a spring that no one knew was there except her and Mary. And no one else saw Mary. Was it even Mary? It was a young lady that she saw at Lourdes, and then the healing spring came out of the earth. A different way of meeting 13. So, the next couplet in the poem about the dupatta. Joga dutana se, so from or with or by, kind of being one with the path, the unique path. And that starts to be, we're in the boat and we start to notice the paddling doesn't seem to do much except tire you. But meanwhile, you start to notice something about the currents. Some of the currents are just powerful and not necessarily friendly or unfriendly. Some of them may be certainly dangerous. And that's where we really recognize, let's say, violence inside the human psyche, not only outside. We just recognize it instead of splitting. And also deeper and more subtle currents and the ways of kind of tapping into them. Resting and being moved. We're being moved anyway. So it could be a sense of discovery of that big mountain of space and energy that you are, within which the little boat So from a kind of the enjoyment of being one with the appropriate practice, appropriate path, the unique, emergent, not apart from others, but still unique. In fact, mutually feeding, just like the poem and Louise and the tree and all. Joga jutanase sunna mahalme, in again, in that, the palace of emptiness, which we could we can translate this word instead of emptiness, sunna, sunya, shunya. Zero, in modern Hindi, shunya means zero. It's another way, like coming back to zero, back to having nothing, gaining nothing, noticing that by my own paddling, I've gained nothing. And maybe that's not a disaster, but an observation. Coming back to being a beginner. Emptiness also is this way that things mutually generate. So a non-separate living. So in the palace of interdependence, in the palace of zero, in the palace of being a beginner, in the palace of a mountain of space, in the palace of doing less, and then appropriate practice continuously arises. When I'm doing it, I get tired and have to rest. When I rest, and that's what generates, what allows life to generate the path, it becomes continuous. There, then, through that way, payo, I obtained, I got, I have, the priceless, anmol, immeasurable. In some songs it says lover, in some songs it says jewel. Payo ratana anmol retohe is what I learned. And it can sound like that I practiced and my practice produced a priceless jewel that I earned. But that's not what it says. Through giving in to my helplessness and then my dependence on the generosity of life, and then learning to receive, we're beginning at the beginning of receptivity, learning to receive in a way that's sustainable. Not too much, not too little. You don't lose completely track that, oh, I'm just a beginner. So easily we feel embarrassed just to be just at the tip of it, just beginning. But then the preciousness of what's happening is so encouraging. It makes up for what a beginner we are. Being a beginner, we receive so much. We don't need to be expert to receive it. What a relief, what a release. So we could even say through being a beginner in the palace of emptiness, in the palace of letting go, in the palace of inseparability in the palace of participation, like it or not. It's more like I found a way to receive the jewel that is anmol, which is really cool because it's not just priceless. It's like it can't be made into an object of trade. It can't be sold or bought. It's not a good to be traded. It's just a good. And then somehow, again, the dupatta opens and you will meet your beloved. Somehow we find a way to receive nothing, to receive space within us and to enjoy space within us, not filling it with good ideas even, or good intentions, or good techniques. We can leave those outside the mahal, the palace, the temple. So just in a simple moment, I hope I could try to express, you're just standing and you see the view, and sometimes it's like, eh, like we want to try to, because we know it's beautiful, and we want to try, I want to see how beautiful it is. And it's just a little bit poor or weak or something. And if it's not too much like, oh, me and my paddle can't make this view be so magnificent as everybody else, surely cavorting in. Or I lost it, I had it, or whatever. Or if only, da da da. Would be for dinner then. So that magical thinking happens again. Childish mind. And just playing with what lifts the veil and opens everything. The mind and the world at once. And what closes it, but especially what opens. It's not much. At the same time, so much courage. Yes. The tree, and I love trees, and I could look at the tree and kind of, where are you? And then if I really let the question, where are you, like let the you kind of float around. It's because it's a question to me more than anything. Where are you? And maybe just feeling my body instead of trying to feel the tree, because I love that tree. Such a beautiful tree. It gave me that feeling of magnificence all those times. But where are you? And so sometimes it's just any little feeling of my own body and ordinariness, nothing special. And then even a little bit, I start to, the way the branches spread out secretly between the trunk and the leaves where no one can see. So how the, what in those simple moments, that's what I mean by the veil opening or closing. Meeting the beloved, or hoping and fearing to meet the beloved.
Hoping and fearing?
Yeah.
Yes. Shared with others in a way I can't possibly know how.
And that's exactly, thank you, a perfect description of that. Like, we're in the little boat and we tap into this. The boat is overwhelmed and the paddler as well would be. And so, yes, it would be overwhelming for that. And so where is big enough? Where is big enough? And that's exactly tapping into the deeper currents. And that's also, again, a little bit answering that question of, did I really say that rest is where the most creativity happens? But we expect creativity to be quite busy and lots of stuff going on. And that's more the acolytes of creativity. Creativity, it would be overwhelming, but then sometimes we can find that that is overwhelmed, but this isn't. Or who is overwhelmed, what is overwhelmed, and what isn't. What you said was better. And then from there, so many different ways it shows up. It could be an idea that's a really great solution to a really tricky, intricate, complex situation, or at least a little response. Or sometimes it's like three things, I thought that was all complicated and it isn't. And like, can I let all that complication out of my system just now? Because, extra.
Microdosing came up, and it was really helpful, the thought of microdosing my well-being. So because of the potential overwhelm, actually was drilling down into a small place and being able to receive that, and that being so much bigger than that tiny little spot.
Yes, and so feeling that overwhelming is a lot to do with my own growing but beginning capacity to receive, to be loved, to be seen, to be met by the beloved. And so not to mess around. I mean, this is a boundaries thing. When our boundaries are broken and we're just at the beginning of starting to take that more lightly and to find how boundaries work well, like in terms of receiving nourishment and protecting us from rain and all kinds of things. And being able to be sensual in the world. And in hubris, we would say, like, give it to me all right now. I'm hungry. And it can be one of the hardest things to bear in the spiritual practice, to see both. That I'm hungry and that there's food and that not yet all, like microdosing, nibbling.
And Jaya, when I get a taste, sometimes just a little taste, I can go into grief. Is that linked to the overwhelm?
So many things could be. It could be that it triggers invasion feeling.
It feels like a grief that I don't have more, that I'm not there more.
And it could be a grief of, like, knowing that harmony is sort of what we're made for, and we don't know it yet. And that can, just not assuming that just because it's tears or grief that it's all the same or all one thing, but it can be really helpful to leave room for that grief, for all that life unlived, as part of a cleansing, that the boundaries can be fun again. That's like the renewing or ripening into innocence thing. So just feeling that sometimes there might be both a wound that's not necessarily needing to be scratched or woken up around overwhelm, and that also it could just be such a natural outpouring with no emotional content, and it could be grieving, really, which is like really honoring that life, the sacredness of life. I want to just say one little quick thing, I hope, quick. That I've just, I was thinking about how the responsibility that I give you to, out of all the overwhelming dozens of different techniques and instructions that go flowing out of my mouth and onto the board and everywhere, to choose one or two or three that fit. And just to know that it can be a natural part of the process, and also we're not usually have, we don't usually have much training practice at that little step, that little but a tremendous step of feeling for myself out of all of that permission, but that exact red velvety tick and that cloud, and that's all. And I don't have to know why or how they go together, just stay with that. It's very hard for the mind. If there's more than maybe like three options, and there are. They did a study in some company where there was some, what do you call it, like retirement thing offered to the employees. And they had such a generous scheme. There were just so many options and very little participation in the schemes. And then someone said, what if you just offer three, only three options? And it just sort of like, I don't know the percentage, but so many more people joined. So it's natural that you'd be like, feel stuck and kind of like half doing one thing and scanning, like, what else should I be doing? Or whatever kind of reaction to that. And just giving time and feeling what feels, when possible, something that's like, oh, as a child, I walked barefoot in the grass, or whatever. That kind of feeling, or just whatever is more simple. And then maybe staying.